Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Chet Guest on the show today. Chet is president of the Technology Investment Group and CTO of Kingdom Capital. Chet, I am so delighted that you are here today. Thank you so much for making the time. I know how busy you are, so I feel so honored that you made the time to be with us today on the show.
Well, I think the honor is all mine. Being with you here is definitely something that I look forward to, and I look forward to the conversation, so thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, let's dive on in. So talk to me a little bit about how you grew up.
So I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky is where I'm from. I actually just moved here from Louisville, Kentucky, and so I was a product of an interracial marriage in which my mom was Hawaiian, my father was an African-American. We grew up in inner city. I was a smart kid that grew up in the hood, which brought some challenges. And so it was very difficult to be, one, an interracial kid growing up that way, and then to be a smart kid growing up there. I brought the sushi restaurants to Louisville is that I had to take a sushi roll and put it in my Superman lunchbox and negotiate that, you know, for the lunchroom pizza. So I think that's where my GE career started as well, is to be able to do that. And so I went through that process of having to be competitive, having to be smart, having to be extra in order to survive in a situation like that. My parents did an awesome job. As I grew up in the house my father grew up in the house his father acquired in the early 1900s. And we didn't necessarily had to live there, but we wanted to be there. And so it was an old definition, and I love my dad and my mom for it, is you look at definition in the African-American community of making it, in most cases, it's leaving the neighborhood in which you were brought up in. And so when you think in terms of all the success that happened within that neighborhood, if we all stayed, what would that neighborhood be like today? So as we look at transformation of the inner city, I think we as African-Americans have a responsibility to look at that a little differently. But I look at my siblings, and we're all very successful because my parents only taught us that success was the only option. It was an expectation. And so in going through that system, I did what I did. I played sports. We all played sports. Taught me a lot of things. I wasn't passionate about sports. I was a different kid, wanted to understand what was STEM today, what wasn't STEM when I was growing up, the engineering elements, the computer games. And so I got the opportunity to go to University of Louisville Speed Scientific School. It was a challenge for me because I thought I could go take a calculus test at 8 o'clock in the morning and hang out with my buddies and party at 10 and 11 o'clock at night. And so I wasn't successful in school. I completed my pre-engineering, and it wasn't that it was challenging to me from an academic perspective, but it was challenging for me from a personal perspective. So I got married very early, got married when I was 21, decided to join the military because I needed a different way. I needed a different path. And so I wanted to go into what was arguably the most challenging field at the time, and that was the nuclear power program. So I signed up for the U.S. Navy, graduated fifth in my class because, you know, quite frankly, I needed a discipline. I needed somebody sitting next to me with a machine gun saying, hey, you know, you need to study. But I got that discipline and I got that know-how, and I think the military could be a way for a lot of kids in my case in inner city that just needs some discipline and needs a different way. And so I took that path and I excelled in it. So that was a path that led me to understand what teamwork was. You know, I was a very decorated soldier. And quite frankly, it taught me a lot. And it much gave me the opportunity to look at life differently, taking me out of the neighborhood I grew up in, giving me perspective, giving me a different way of life, giving me a paycheck, setting up a young family, taking care of a family. The military gave me that. So I spent almost 9 years in the military, and I decided to get out. I was in nuclear power. I was on submarines. I spent 300 days a year for 6 years on submarines with a young child. That wasn't a formula for success.
No.
And so decided to take a different path and to get out. And I think the one thing that convinced me is that later in my career and playing basketball, I had knee surgeries, bad knees, and my last knee surgery in the military. And actually died on an operating table. So I says, well, you know, I didn't see the light. I felt a little warm and said, well, maybe I should make a different decision as far as my path is concerned. So I decided at that point to get out of the military. Then I returned back home to Louisville.
So then what did you do? What was next?
I got it. When I got out of the military, I wanted to go back to what it is that I loved, and that was computers. And I got an opportunity to join a company called CBM, which was a local hardware software company within the region, Kentucky mainly. That company was acquired by a company called Ameridata, which was home office here in St. Louis, Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I got an opportunity to come to St. Louis in a home office often. And that was in 1994 when I joined. I got out of the military and I joined. I got an opportunity to join the GE family. I came to GE through an acquisition. So GE Capital ITS, now the company CompuCom, acquired Ameridata. So in 1994, I was a break fix technician, mm-hmm. working on printers. And again, I was an electrician in the military, a nuclear electrician. So being able to fix things, work on things was
in your DNA.
It was in my DNA.
Sure.
But what I was developing over time was leadership. And so I was a leader in the military. I love people, but I like to tinker with things too. And so in 1994, break fix technician. In 2005, I was a senior vice president in GE. And I don't tell you that to impress you, only to tell you that GE as a company has been very good to me, and it's mm-hmm. good to most to join it. And it's given me the opportunity to be the best version of myself and to grow within that system. So I had the opportunity to serve under four chairmen.
Right.
Starting with Jack Welch.
There were seven in total, right?
And I served under four, which I guess classify me as a seasoned leader, is what they called us old people, Lisa. But it was fun. It was a learning environment. It was a family environment. It was culture. And,
right.
and we led in that. And that was that was one of the positives. You know, when you talked about being a GE, people knew what that was.
Absolutely. And it's kind of iconic. When you think of GE, you just think of the management principles and the leadership and the innovation that comes out of GE. And you said that you served under four. So Jack Welch was the first one.
Yes, he was.
And I know you and I have talked about this, but top grading was Jack's idea, right? And
right.
everybody that's in business knows about top grading.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time on people. And as you look at the organization, of course, it changed over time. As you look at that top portion of your organization, you know, that top 20, that middle 70, that bottom 10, it was as a leadership team, how are you developing an organization? And, you know, over time, I came to realize that, you know, it really wasn't God's plan for everyone to retire from a General Electric mm-hmm. company, and that when you pull people through a system and you try to protect people through a system, it really, where they don't fit, it really isn't good for them. And, of course, you know, GE, among other companies, have changed their mindset as it relates to top grading. But we spend an inordinate amount of time looking at our people, giving them realistic expectations around their careers, paying attention to their desires, and being able to align, you know, our leadership, you know, and our guidance to those people, lining them up with the things that their strengths would align to. And I remember the days we would sit in a room and we would have a card for every employee, and there's 500 employees in the organization, and you would spend 2 days talking about 500 people and having debates around, you know, mm-hmm. who is your top talent, who's trending towards the top, who's challenged, you know, and who's trending towards the bottom. And my pet peeve as a leader was that anyone I talked about in that bottom 10% should know that they're there. mm-hmm. and that we as leaders are helping them and talking to them and communicating to them around their performance and what our expectations are and the gap between performance and expectations. So it was a challenging time. Mm-hmm. It challenged us as leaders. It sometimes didn't feel good as a leader to be in that spot. But as you mature and as you grow and you start to look at, I remember times where I had to do layoffs, and no one likes to do that. But when you have an employee just stand up and give you, embrace you and give you a hug and say thank you because of the stress that they were under and mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. they needed that transition, but they were afraid to make that transition themselves.
Sure.
And there's, we have a lot of examples of that too. So life is 5% of what happens to you and 95% of what you do about it.
Oh, I love that quote.
So we live in the 95 and, yes. And so it's been great. And so you go from Jack and you go to Jeff.
Jeff had a little bit different mindset, right?
Yeah, Jeff was IT friendly, meaning he made that transition to digital, created GE Digital as a whole. We went from probably an analytical company doing Six Sigma. I was a master.
You were a black belt.
I was a master black belt. Black belt mm-hmm. myself, to more Fastworks and Agile and getting into that minimum viable product and having a different mindset. And it was a positive thing from a driving decisions, but maybe a little negative in that, when you go from waterfall methodologies of programming with a lot of touch points with your customers on requirements up front to Agile and Fastworks, which when we made that transition, it was probably less about, although meant to be interactive with your customer, it was, we're going to build it faster, but maybe not build it at, what you want. And so we had some self-correcting to do there. But again, I think Jack and what he did around GE Digital and what we were trying to do to sort of own that IoT space was transformational as well.
Mm-hmm. So tell me what GE looks like today. And I should have looked at this, but mm-hmm. I know at one time there's GE Healthcare. I mean, there's all sorts of divisions that made up the greater GE.
I would say there's a couple of things that happened transitionally for us. So when we had the issues with the banks, the government stepped in and they declared, because we were basically trading as a bank because of the GE Capital's position within us, is that we were deemed too large to fail. Now, as a chief technology officer at GE, that was huge for us. I mean, mm-hmm. it would cost us millions, if not billions of dollars to be regulated as a bank. And so it was our goal to get out of that designation. And the only way to get out of that designation is to sell down GE Capital. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the PE around a bank and an industrial company is different. And so when you think in terms of what was going on with GE, so you're selling down sort of your bank and your short cycle businesses. GE Appliances was on the block, another short cycle business. We were transitioning from short cycle to long cycle on the industrial side. And what that unearths and what you get to see in that are things that are systemic to long cycle businesses, and that is inventory turns and accounts payable and mm-hmm. receivables and all of those things that are systemic problems. Those start to come into play because you can't really count on the short cycle businesses to, I wouldn't say hide, but it does mask your financials in a way. And so you saw that transition that is happening. So I think there was a point too where we were good at what we did. We had great leaders. You had some turnover in leadership. You had some flux there. I think we fell in love with our story a little bit, and we fell in love with PowerPoint. I remember an opportunity that I got to eat dinner with Jeff Immelt, and he mm-hmm. said, Chet, if you give me two things I should concentrate on as a leader. And I said, Jeff, it's really get us back to leadership. We manage a lot of things. We manage P&Ls. We manage financials. We manage businesses. We got to get back to our core, and that is leadership. And we had a long conversation about that. And then I said, also, get rid of PowerPoint in this company. And I said, I spend most of my time creating PowerPoints, listening to PowerPoints, helping someone to create PowerPoints. It's all about PowerPoints. And then, of course, when you arrive at a level in the company, you get somebody to do your PowerPoints, and they get the automations, and
right.
they get, we would argue around fonts and other things, right? And
sure.
And so we got to a point where GE has its own font. It's called GE Inspira. So
okay.
it's a, yeah, so we have our own font within
Microsoft.
So what
did he
Microsoft.
Say when you said get rid of the PowerPoints?
Well, he said to me, and this was a job-changing scenario. He says, Chet, he says, I get it. He says, we're changing the way we look at sessions. So we look at our session planning for us is your financial sessions, your people sessions. We have several sessions. He says, I'm streamlining those processes and we're simplifying the company such that we're not always living in sessions. And I said, yeah, Jeff. I said, I saw the simplification, corporate simplification pitch. He said, Chet, what did you think? I said, it's a simplification pitch. It's 43 pages.
Not that simple.
And so he said, got it, which is code word for enough of that.
Right.
You know, so I'm like, all right, it's been nice working here. But it was. So we really had to take a step back. And I think given some of the financial challenges that we're having, the fact that we're transforming a company, short cycle to long cycle, Jeff decided that it was his time to do something different along with the board. And then that's when we had Mr. Flannery come in. And so John was probably hit unfairly with a lot of issues that he had to clean up.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't get much time with John. He did his best to clean up what it is he could clean up. But it was that notion of GE's always been known for its ingrown talent, right?
Mm-hmm.
You would hire somebody. The process of putting another CEO in always came from the inside. And I think, you know, with the pressure on the board, the transition of the company, it was, you know, let's look outside.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So Larry, I think, is absolutely the right leader. I think he is going to transform the company the way it needs to be transformed. But it's a long road to do, and it's some tough decisions to make.
Right.
But I think he's the right person to do it.
Good. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Chet Guess. As a business leader, you know that keeping a solid first impression with your potential clients, customers, and talent is vital to reaching your organization's goals. If you haven't optimized your website, or if you don't even have a website, you're missing an opportunity to shape your first impression so that it shows your brand in the best possible light. If you're thinking about revolutionizing your website, let's talk. Our team at Technology Partners is ready to help you reshape your online presence. Go to tpi.co/websites and start your journey today. Chet, I want you to tell our listeners a little bit about Crotonville. And I remember reading about this, and I think Crotonville was your leadership institute that was founded in 1956. I think the nexus around that was innovation, ideas, learning, and I know GE was a learning organization. And then somehow I want to hear about Aunt Barbara.
Yes, I definitely will do that. So Crotonville, for anyone in GE, is the place you want to go. It's that one place. And what Crotonville is it's GE's training facility, and it's all self-contained. It's all GE. It's a hotel. It's eating facilities, the bar, all of the conference centers. Everything's GE. So the only reason to be there is if you're GE or you're having a meeting with GE. And so we had just a huge catalog of training opportunities there. And quite frankly, as you cut your teeth as a leader, there's a path and a track of leadership courses that you should take. And they were all aligned to Crotonville. And then, of course, there were the higher-level courses that were aligned to sessions that were held at Crotonville. So you would get an opportunity to present to the Executive Council of GE and to the chairman, the CEO, and to the leadership team and had an opportunity to interact with them. And so it was very prestigious to be a part of that and to be immersed in that whole opportunity. It also is one of those deals where you would spend more time on your first trip with your boss talking about what to do and not to do in that bar that was at Crotonville. You had to remember that, you know.
Those were important lessons, too.
More careers lost in that place than made. So
right.
That was always fun to say, all right, you don't want to be the first one there. You don't want to be the last one to leave.
Right.
But you do not want to spend much time there. But, you know, everything about GE and its leadership team was about learning opportunities. Talk about to Aunt Barbara for a minute. She was a special aunt that was my spiritual guide as I was coming up young, 21-year-old, that sat at her table. And she said, Chet, you know, God has some very special things planned for you as it relates to people. She said, you have one of two choices. You can either accept it and suffer less or not and suffer greatly. And so she has been a factor in my life and a connection to God that I didn't understand as a young man. But over time, as we prayed together, and she's prayed on my life for as long as I've been on this earth, you know, I got to start to see what those prayers were about. And so I sat in her chair, and I was at Crotonville, one of our large leadership, one of our senior leadership courses, and it's a three-week course, and you get a free weekend. And my Aunt Barbara lived 30 minutes from Crotonville. So I said, hey, it's been a while since I've seen her, so I'm going to sit down. I sat down in that same chair. She says, so how's this people thing coming? She says, I haven't heard from you in a while, so I expect you haven't accepted it yet. And to give you the backdrop of that time frame was we were going through some major layoffs. I was being promoted to a new executive of the company. I was going to have people impacted by these layoffs, and I wasn't there to help and protect. So I was struggling. And so as I sat and I talked to her, she said to me, and this is, you heard me say this earlier in the conversation, it's not God's plan to have everyone retire from GE. You need to let these layoffs go. But to give you the sense of her spirituality, those layoffs weren't public, nor had I had a conversation with her. So you would think over time that I would eventually listen to her. But, some of us are slower than others.
Line.
She did have a direct line. And so when I got back to Crotonville, and mind you, all GE, no one on site except for GE, on my pillow was the Prayer of Jabez. And I opened that book. And it says, go as far as and wide as your heart desires, always with God by your side. Love, Aunt Barbara. I, to this day, don't know how she got that book there. I never ask her. And quite frankly, even...
She was a very resourceful Aunt Barbara.
Yeah, she was. And of course, then it took me 4 years to read that book. But she was special. She still is. We still talk. She asked me not too long ago. She said, are you still saying the Prayer of Jabez? I say it every morning. My family and I, we pray in a circle. And we say that prayer every day. And she says, Chad, you have to turn that thing off, because God will continue to increase your territory.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Well, I've heard that story. But I guess the first time that I heard the story, I didn't hear this part. Where she said, how's that people thing going? Because I haven't heard from you, so I guess you're not listening. Because
yeah.
She had not reached out to her. So she's like, you don't get the people thing quite yet because she haven't reached out to your Aunt Barbara. That's funny.
Well,
it
goes to faith and where I am today. And I use sort of a submarine analogy here. Is faith is not needing a windshield to see where you're going or a rearview mirror to see where you've been. It's just understanding God is ordering your steps. And I needed to see, and as I look back on it, we all are very good in hindsight, looking at how God's played a part in your life. It's now understanding, as talking to my wife at a big meeting a few months ago, and she says, Chet, I hope this goes well. And I said, the difference between Chet of yesterday and Chet of today with Kingdom Capital is today will go as God plans it, and it's being able to submit to his will. And that's where she was trying to get me the whole time,
mm-hmm.
But of course, I want to lead this. I want to make this happen. My
right.
implementation of faith was God put me in a game. It's like much like the coach, guide my thoughts, my action, and my words, but I'm in the game. And now it is really trying to understand how to be submissive to his will and to figure out what you need to do in it.
Sure. Well, to me, this is the perfect segue because I wanted to talk to you. What moved you from one Lou to the new Lou? So you moved from Louisville to St. Louis, and we're so glad that you're here. So let's talk about that transition. What brought you here?
As the CTO and overall the infrastructure and infrastructure products for the company, we're in 176 countries. And so I was home office out of Cincinnati. My family lived in Louisville, so we had an apartment in Cincinnati. I had a six-month-old at the time, and I lived in a different city. I was raising my kids, via FaceTime and now the Facebook portals, and we
right.
would still sit and eat dinner together, but we'd do it electronically.
Yes.
And what God was doing for me and to me at the time, Dave Stewart was a big factor in my life, was a mentor and a coach and was always there
you
for me.
You had met him because
I had met him through,
GE used
through GE.
Worldwide, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I had met him, and so he was always there, and he always knew when to reach out and knew when I was struggling. Again, transition, although not a transition, from Aunt Barbara to Dave Stewart and even Brandon Mann, who was also who I had met through that whole process, is to be able to sit still for a minute. As I asked God for discernment The problem is I couldn't hear him because of the noise that was around him, around me. And so what he did was he paused me, put me in that apartment by myself. He gave me a book to read. He gave me several books to read. He gave me a church that I could go to at 6 o'clock in the morning before work. He introduced me to a homeless community, and he was transforming me to prepare me to work for a faith-based organization. So it was several things. It was around how I was changing, how the company was changing, how I was raising my family from a distance. Now, I have a saint for a wife, and I love Lindsay to death, and Lindsay was ex-GE, and she understood, and she understood what I needed to do and the sacrifices I needed to make, and never questioned it and never pushed back. But coming home every Thursday night or Friday, you're seeing your kids for a couple of 3 days, it was difficult. And I think the one moment that sticks out in my mind was when my middle child, Madeline, says, "Dad, can we go to your house this weekend?" We were in Louisville at the time, and I said, "Madeline, you're in my house." She goes, "Oh, you don't live here." I'm talking about the one in Cincinnati. And so it's like, wow. You know, my kids, they don't feel me. And so we were going through some major restructuring and reorganizations in the company. You know, I looked my wife in the eye, and I says, "Look, I can't do this anymore. Spiritually, I'm changing. There's something bigger there for me. I want to go serve." Not that GE's not a great company. It was. It still is. It just, it didn't fit where I was. And so, you know, I had the opportunity, you know, with a great boss and CIO, Chris Drumgold, to have a real heart-to-heart with him that says, "Look, I really want to do something different." He made it and structured it in a way that I could retire. So I actually retired May 31st, and I started with Kingdom Capital June the 1st. So I, you know, some people
long
take some time off.
Long retirement there.
And it's so powerful in that, you know, people ask me what I do at Kingdom Capital. Mm-hmm. I really explain it in two ways. First off, every Monday, our team gets together, and we talk about what we were blessed with over the week and the weekend, and what we need prayers for. And we all know each other's families, and we know each other's experiences, and we live in that moment of being involved in each other's lives.
Doing life together, that's
yes,
what I call it.
Yes, mm-hmm. And we pray together. Mm-hmm. We pray in every meeting that we do. That was a part of my spiritual journey and where I was going. And secondarily, as a leadership team, we get together and we study Scripture and its applicability to what it is we do in the workplace.
So we
mm-hmm. strongly believe in that values drive valuation.
And I love so that. As we values at, drive valuation.
Right. And so we are trying to apply values, first and foremost, looking in the mirror and applying them to ourselves. And then as we look at investment, there has to be a values alignment.
Right. Let's back up for a minute, because our listeners that are listening may go, "Oh, I don't even know what Kingdom Capital does." Why don't you talk a little bit about Kingdom Capital?
Okay. Absolutely. So Kingdom Capital is a private investment firm that's values-based. So our goal really is to have institutional investors in us, is that we invest in others, values-based, and then eventually have a foundation that lies as connected to us in order to take those that virtuous cycle of capital and be able to invest it back into 501(c)s and the community and people. And so you won't hear this often, but we are a private investment firm formed for the purposes of giving money away, which is, you're never going to hear that.
No, you don't.
We're looking at kingdom sizes, we would call it kingdom size bets and opportunities. So we have a relationship with Washington University, working with the university on capitalization of research and being able to look at cancer and how to apply technology to advance that and utilize technology in the whole health and medical sector. So we focus on that. I came alongside to create the technology investment group. There's two terms we use. Everybody knows what IRR is. In that return, we look at ERR. That's the eternal rate of return, which really for us means how do you run your company? How do your employees feel? What are your values? What are your value system? What is your culture? Is it sustainable? How do we come alongside to enhance and help? But it's also about the things that you work on. Are we, you know, going to make a difference? And that was initially mm-hmm. difficult for me, because when you think about technology, technology by itself is meaningless. Technology as it's applied to something is when it becomes valuable. For instance, as we look at Prochaya, a company that we just formed with WashU out of that research, and it's going to take drug discovery from 15, 20 years into the 2-3 year time frame. So, you know, that whole speed of market to heal the body and other companies that we're looking to form, but then investments that we look to make in companies that will, A, have sort of the right leadership and the right culture, but B, how those things enhance our BD activities and also enhance people's lives. So that's the things that we're focused on.
There's so much there, but we don't have time to go into everything. I do want to talk about something extra. So what do you believe is a something extra that every leader needs?
Well, so I have to factor in the shield values, as we call them at Kingdom Capital. And those are values that we look for. They're biblically based for us, although you don't have to necessarily have Christian beliefs, but have values, similar values, and that is service, humility, integrity, excellence, love, and diversity. We call them our shield values. The one I have focused on the most over my life is really about humility. So when you ask about every leader and what they need, you know, you go back to the base word of lead, and really what that means is to have charge of something or to guide on a way, especially by going in advance. And so as a young leader, you say, well, you know, I'm going to lead by example. And, of course, you have a little bit of arrogance and confidence around, well, now I'm a leader and I'm special. Mm-hmm. So you want people to understand that, but maybe respectfully. But I think as you grow over time, you start to understand that it's not about you. It's not about you as an individual. It's less about you and it's more about the people. You know, as you approach that humbly and you look at humility, it's about transformation of leading with your ears versus leading with your mouth. It's about understanding your organization and the people around you. It's about propping people up. It's about getting the best version of them, which in essence gets the best version of yourself. And it's about best for, best from, which is what we're about. And, you know, one of the things we do in our leadership meetings at Kingdom Capital is we have this little argument between us as to who is the dumbest in the room.
It's the dumbest in the room.
And we compete on it, right?
Okay.
Because now it's the thing.
Have you got the trophy yet?
And Brandon, man, he will love it. No, it's got to be me. It's got to be me. But what that means is we yield to each other, and we respect each other, and we respect each other's opinions. And to me, humility is just something that you will get over time as a what I call a seasoned leader. And the earlier you understand that, the further I think you will go is hiring people better than you. It's understanding that you want to transform those folks to be better than you.
Right. I
always say to guys that I recognize early on in their careers, like, look, I want you to understand I was good to you when I led you. So when you become my boss, I expect the same thing. I expect the same thing. Be gentle.
I like that.
And so that for me, humility is the big key for me.
Couldn't agree more. Well, is there anything coming up, Chet, that you want to tell the listeners about? Or is there anything like that you want to tell the listeners about? Or they want to just reach out to you, you know, to ask you questions about things?
Well, they certainly can contact us through kingdomcapital.com. And quite frankly, we are a fairly new firm, 2 years on the health and medical side, since June on the technology side. We're trying to connect to the Cortex and St. Louis in general. And quite frankly, we'll look inside before we go outside. Mm-hmm. And so we're really scouring St. Louis to figure out what those investments would be and how we connect those investments. Mm-hmm. And then having a founder in Kingdom Capital and Worldwide Technology be the same, it's really how to bridge that gap. And prop up a startup community in a different way. Part of my role as CTO is to build that bridge between what is Kingdom Capital and what is Worldwide Technology without any appearance of conflict of interest or any of those things. And I think we have that figured out. And so we just take two great, you know, organizations and figure out how to make them better and then how to take a startup community, starting with St. Louis in some cases, and help to prop them up. So more to come on that. I'm looking very forward. Again, been in St. Louis since July and moved here with my family, excited about the people and opportunities, excited to meet people like you, Lisa, and to be a part of this. And I look forward to learning this city and its great people and figuring out how to make a difference and serve.
Well, we are so glad you're here. I think St. Louis just hit the jackpot, seriously, Chet, with having you and your family here. So thank you again for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.